Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest by your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on vaccination and this avian flu when we come back. You know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." You'll read that in Acts 5, verse 29. That's a revolutionary concept, and it's impossible to put into practice unless you personally know the law. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three principles of law that support Peter's position recorded in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to the Federal Constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is the second. And a Supreme Court case called Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census or public school or Social Security or vaccinations or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look those laws up, how to research them out, to code plead the law, to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Now, if you don't know the law of the scripture and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one. Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, remember that our business and Mosaic Law Schools are both available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org and just click onto the email and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking this week about vaccination. Everybody wants to be vaccinated. Everybody wants to be protected from the flu. At least that's the hype that's being put out by the news media. Now we've got this new flu, and I mean this is going to be a big one. This new flu, it's going to come down, I think, as the years go by, about like the war in Iraq. First of all, they came to us, remember, with these weapons of mass destruction, and we've got to protect Americans with this preemptive strike. And then when we got over into the war with the Iraqis, we found out they didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, but that was a lie, that it was a lie promulgated by George Bush and Tony Blair to get us into the war. Well, now you know we're in the war. Can't cut and run now. So they succeeded in their goal. The real goal is we want to steal the oil from the Iraqis. That's the bottom line. And at the same time, our economies, the world economy, is in trouble, and we need an infusion of liquidity into the world's equity markets. And so the war, spending $200 billion in that war in Iraq, is a big shot in the arm to put that liquidity into the world's economic system. Now, if they came to us and said, look, we need to go to war because we need a liquidity shot into the economy, I don't think people would want to send their kids over to Iraq to get killed for liquidity in the economic system. But to protect America or to avenge America for the 9/11 attacks, now that makes all the sense in the world. So you've got to have the right spin, the right hype. You've got to have the right product to sell. And so Colin Powell came into the United Nations, and I remember watching Colin Powell. That's what convinced me that the Iraqis had weapons of mass destruction. Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, with maps and intelligence reports and documents and facts and figures and names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, presented the case to the United Nations. Hell, we all bought it. Vaccination works the same way. What you do is you hype it up and you propagandize people. Adolf Hitler, I think, summed it up. He actually got this quotation from one of the popes, but Adolf Hitler said, if you tell a big enough lie, often enough, people will believe it. People believe the Social Security lie, the DDT lie, the weapons of mass destruction lie, the vaccination lie. Now, when you look into these things independently and you start getting some information, well, the current big lie is global warming. And, of course, people buy into that, and one of these days we'll have legislation, and that legislation is aimed at an objective, and the people that are pushing that will obtain their objective. In vaccination, the people who wanted to promote vaccination have obtained their objective, and that is they want to make a lot of money, vaccinating a lot of people. If it happens to kill a bunch of people in the process, that's tough titty. Now, I'm not here to save the world or save America from vaccinations. I don't really care, you know, one way or the other. People want to get shot up. You want to shoot your kid up? That's your business in life. What I'm interested in doing is, as a journalist, as a reporter, is in just putting the cards on the table, and then you can make your own decision. I mean, you're an adult. You're smart enough to figure out for yourself what you want to do. My complaint in life is that we don't get all the facts. You know, if we'd had all the facts concerning the war in Iraq, I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack American would have supported that war. I don't think that if the average Joe Sixpack American had all the facts on vaccination, I don't think the average Joe Sixpack would go out and get vaccinated. I don't believe it. I won't. And I'm not totally ignorant about vaccination. I got to tell you a little story over here. One time when I was a young fella, young buck, feeling my oats, and I had young children, and my oldest boy, Ted, was in about first grade, something like that, and I had him enrolled in a private school. I had a little money at the time, and I started all of my children out in private school so that they would learn phonics rather than look, say. I wanted my children to learn how to read. So my boy was going to this private school over in Berkeley. I lived in Oakland, California at that time, or Alameda. And one day the little boy comes home, and he's got this note. And the note is from the school nurse. And this note says on Wednesday, and they had the date on there, vaccinations will be given for, and they cited the various vaccinations, and that all children under law in California needed these vaccinations, and that it was mandatory, and blah, 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 blah. And it said, please sign here at the bottom of the page, and we'll shoot little Teddy up next Wednesday. And it's got a place down there for me to sign this. And so normal parents that love their little children and are very concerned about their little children and disease and would sign that permission slip to give these children their vaccines and send it off. And after all, it's the law of the state and blah, blah, blah. So I look at that and I ask myself this question. Now, if it's the law and it's mandatory, why do they need my signature on this permission slip? I mean, think about it for a minute. If the law of California is mandatory and every kid in the state's got to be shot up because he goes to school, why are you sending me this letter and saying to me, sign here, Mr. Gordon? Give us your permission. Give us your consent. Would seem like to me they don't need any consent. Seems like to me they just send a notice home and say, last Wednesday we vaccinated your kid according to state law. It's the law, and if you don't like it, lump it. So right away, that sent me a signal that said, looks like to me that they want my voluntary consent. Now, I'm opposed to vaccines and vaccination. So I wrote a separate letter. And I said in the letter, dear school nurse, thank you very much for your invitation for vaccines next Wednesday for little Teddy. And let me tell you, do not shoot my kid up with snake venom and monkey pus. And if you do, rest assured, litigation will follow. Always like that line. Rest assured, litigation will surely follow if you do this. And if this is going to be a problem, I will keep little Teddy home next Wednesday to make sure that there's no mistake. So I sent that letter with little Teddy to school, and sure enough, that day, about Monday again, the school nurse called me, and she said that she would like to talk to me about some facts that I was possibly unaware of. And so I said, well, lay it on me, lady. Tell me all about these facts that I'm unaware of. Maybe there's something I don't know. I never claimed to know everything. And so she preached me a sermon for about 10 minutes on the telephone there about how vaccines had saved the world from bubonic plague and smallpox and polio and, I mean, you name it, and the world's been saved. And I'm sure that this lady, a nurse, registered nurse, went to college, has degrees after her name. I'm sure she believed every word that she told me. But just because somebody believes something doesn't make it true. I'm sure that Adolf Hitler believed every word that he told those people out there, but I'm not sure that every word that came out of Hitler's mouth was necessarily true. I'm not sure that every word that came out of his mouth was necessarily false. We find in life that people, when they speak, have a mixture of truth and error. And so this lady, I'm sure, was sincere, and I'm sure that she meant the best as she finished her presentation, and I thanked her. I said, thank you very much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to call me and tell me about these facts. And I said, now, getting back to the subject matter of vaccinations next Wednesday, I do not want my child vaccinated. And if this is going to pose a problem, I'll keep my boy home. And this nurse, she couldn't contain herself, and she said, well, could you tell me why? Now, for me to sit here and expound for 10 or 15 minutes on why I don't want my kid shot up and give you the statistics and the facts and the figures, I'm not going to take the time, effort, and energy to do that. Now, I'm going to do that on the air. I'm going to give you those facts. But, you know, just talking to this lady on the telephone, I'm not going to waste my time. It's enough for you to know I don't want to buy your product. I don't have to explain to the Ford salesman why it is that I want to buy a Chevrolet. It is sufficient for me to say I don't want to buy your damn Ford. That's all that needs to be said. Now, I might talk to my friend Bob or my dad or somebody else and explain to them all the good reasons why I like a Chevrolet more than a Ford and why I want to buy it. But I'm not going to spend my time doing that for a crummy nurse. So she said, in effect, that I hated my child and that I was causing him a great disservice and that I had my head up my rectal region and didn't know what I was talking about. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, now that you opened your mouth, lady, let me ask you a question. I said, how many of those children next Wednesday are going to be vaccinated? And she said, all of them. Only little Teddy will be the only one that's not vaccinated. I said, how many children in his class? 40. Get this, 40 children in his class. This is a private school. And talk about a big class, 40 kids in the class. I'm sending my kid to school, spending the money to teach this kid, and he's got 40 kids in this class. Okay. And I said, now let me ask you this. The other 39 children in this class are all going to be vaccinated. So if little Teddy comes to school and he's got the measles, he can't give it to these other 39 children, can he? Because they've all been protected, haven't they? She said, that's right. That's right. I said, okay, good. I said, now these other 39 children have all been vaccinated and they can't get the measles, so they can't give it to little Teddy, can they? That's right. That's right. They'll all be vaccinated and protected, and they cannot spread the disease to little Teddy. I said, okay, well, no, I think that solves all of our problems. You shoot up the other 39 kids and leave my kid out. If my kid gets the measles someplace else and comes to school, it won't affect any other public interest because they're all protected. They can't get the disease. And they can't give the disease to my boy because they can't get it to give to him. So why does my boy need to be vaccinated? And it was a long pregnant pause on the telephone. There's always a long pregnant pause, boys and girls, when you use reason, logic, and common sense. Furthermore, even if he gets the measles, so what? I had the measles, and now I got over the measles, and I have lifelong immunity, and I'll never get measles again. But if you give this kid a vaccine for the measles, it doesn't give him lifelong immunity. It gives him immunity for about 5 years. So every 5 years, you got to spend $25 to get this immunity. Well, now just ask yourself this question. The kid's 5 years old. Do you want to spend $25, that's $5 a year, every year, for the next 70 years? $5 a year for the next 70 years. $350 to give this kid immunity from measles. Or do you want to just let nature take its course? The kid gets measles and gets lifelong immunity, and it doesn't cost you a dime. I mean, I don't care. You're not going to hurt my feelings if you want to spend $370 over the next 70 years giving yourself immunity from measles. But I don't. And that's what I told her. I don't. Now remember, when you take your child into the doctor and you have the doctor shoot your kid up, you're doing it with, or he's doing it with, your consent. If this kid comes down with autism, you can't sue the doctor, you can't sue the pharmaceutical company, you can't do jack squat. You are responsible for the outcome. Do you know what the outcome of this vaccination is going to be? Because I don't. Some children have reactions called side effects. Some children die from the vaccinations. About 100 children a year die in the United States of America, which isn't very many. I mean, look, they're shooting up 50 million kids every year. And for 100 out of 50 million to die is statistically inconsequential. That's what they tell you. But it's pretty damn consequential to the 100 kids that died. Now, if you didn't have any vaccinations whatsoever, the argument goes, thousands would die from disease. Only 100 are going to die from the vaccinations. And that's what makes it worthwhile. Okay. If you buy into that argument, which makes all the sense in the world, if it's true that the vaccines will prevent disease and save thousands of lives at the expense of just 100, it makes all the sense in the world. I don't deny that. But is that true? I know you believe that it's true, but is it really true? I contend that that's a lie. It's false. It's not true at all. Now, The Poison Needle was written by Eleanor McBean back in 1974. So this is 84, 94, 104. It's 31 years old. So in 1974, she writes a book called The Poisoned Needle. How many pages are in this book? 230, something like that. 226 pages. 226 page book. And it's well documented, and it's got all kinds of quotations in it, and it's got articles and all kinds of information about vaccines and vaccinations and statistics that come from the Department of the Army and come from medical records and city health officials all over the United States and Great Britain. In fact, from all over the world. And so I took a look at this book many years ago, and I said to myself, okay, well, now I'm going to check some of these out. And so I checked out some of the sources. I didn't check out every one, but I checked out 10 or 12 of them, and they all proved out. And I said, well, If I pick up a book and it's got a bibliography in it and it's got resources, and I look at 10 or 15 sources out of 20 or 30 or 50 or 100, and I say, well, that's probably pretty logical, I come to a conclusion. And my conclusion is vaccination is bad for you. That's my conclusion. You have to come to that conclusion for yourself. It's bad for me, it's bad for my family, and it's bad for my children. I'm not going to do it. So let me share with you what I learned. And after all, you got to remember that 89% of Americans believe in vaccination. Just like there was a time when most Americans believed in the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now there's fewer and fewer of us that believe in weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And consequently, the enthusiasm for the war in Iraq is declining rapidly in this country. And understandably so. You know, when you've been lied to, when you've been snookered, you don't like to admit it. But after a while, when you can no longer deny it, it just makes you mad as hell. So let's see if I can make you mad as hell about vaccines. The increasing flood of evidence against vaccination and the growing demand for the unsuppressed facts about this touchy subject have literally forced this book into being. As this work has progressed and the extensive research has been carried on to trace down and to organize the material for this manuscript, other valuable and long-concealed records that I had not expected have come into my hands, as if by some unseen power. It is to be hoped that the information contained within these pages will help you to sweep away the tragic errors that cloud the minds of the people as well as the physicians. It is urgent that the living words of truth or some other force be applied to abolish that deadly weapon, the poison needle, which has been the menacing roadblock standing in the way of progress in the healing arts for all of these many years. Vaccination and the false germ theory upon which it is hinged has led mankind far astray and has severed the fragile thread that offered medical theory and practice a hope of becoming a science. But under the sway of our present degenerative medical methods, the health of our people has declined to the lowest point in history. A 1955 survey showed that over 90% of the population of the United States is below par mentally or physically. And according to life insurance records, army reports, hospital statements, government statistics, and physical examinations for marriage licenses and employment, it has been revealed that there is hardly one normal, healthy person in 100 left in the United States of America. The Cancer Foundation states that 1 out of every 4 is marked for cancer. Boys and girls, let me interject this. This is 1974. In 1974, 1 out of 4 people in the United States would contract cancer in his lifetime. In 1900, it was 1 in 33. Today, as I speak, in 2005, it's 1 in 2, and they tell us that it will be 1 in 1 in the year 2020. Now, boys and girls, cancer is getting worse, not better, in the United States. I mean, we've gone from 1 in 33 to 1 out of 1. That's 100%. Now, that ought to tell you that the medical establishment is a poor option to whatever it was that we were doing in 1899. Whatever medicine has to offer in the realm of cancer between 1900 and 2005 is a hell of a lot worse than what we had. If we could go back to where we were in 1900, we'd all be better off. Our chances of getting cancer would be 1 in 33, not 1 in 2. Now, again, I'm not telling you not to go get your pap smear and not to go down here and get your vaccinations and do whatever it is that you think you ought to do. But the cold, hard facts are that in 1918, the Army, taking the young men of America, the 18 to 26-year-old young men of America, into the service in 1918, into World War I, discovered that 60% of all of those recruits were healthy. 40% had something wrong with them. That wasn't good in 1918, when you got 40% of your population that have statistically some disease, some ailment. Something is physically or mentally wrong with 40% of the population. By 1955, boys and girls, it was 90% had something wrong with them. And you're going to sit there and tell me, my God, the medical establishment of America is a miracle. God, I'll say amen to that. It's a miracle that you're still alive. It's the damnedest thing I've ever heard of, and people swear by it. Now, you talk about deception. The cold, hard, naked facts are, just take a look at you. And ask yourself, do you have any symptoms? Do you wear glasses? Do you need a hearing aid? Have you got arthritis? Have you got pains in your joints or your knuckles? Have you got atherosclerosis or arterial sclerosis? Or do you have diabetes? Or is there something wrong with you? Because if there is, it ain't normal. You were created to live for 70 years with no disease. Of course, if you evolved, then time and chance happens to you. But if you were created by the God of Abraham, you were designed to live for 70 years with no physical ailments. Now, if you've got a physical ailment, there's something wrong there. So the Cancer Foundation states that in 1974, 1 out of every 4 is marked for cancer. The figures on heart trouble are even worse. And the other killer diseases come in for their toll also. Practically all of the rest of the people have symptoms of less serious diseases, these symptoms being headaches, constipation, weak eyes, dental caries, colds, pain, stomach trouble, and so on. Most, if not all, diseases are avoidable and curable at a certain stage, but not under the deceptive medical method of poisoning the well and the sick with vaccines and drugs and then mutilating them with unnecessary surgical operations. When socialized medicine was threatening
A meeting of medical officials was called to discuss just how many and which operations would really be necessary if there was no profit in it. How many people would we subject to the knife? And it was decided by these medical professionals that only 3% of operations would be considered essential under those conditions. 97% of all surgical procedures that are conducted in the United States are totally unnecessary. 97%. Hey, listen, but it makes a lot of money for the surgeons, the hospitals, and the people that are selling it. And the people that are buying all of these operations believe fervently that they need their gallbladders and their appendixes removed, or they wouldn't be paying thousands of dollars to have those operations performed. Now, when people believe something, I mean, they're fervent about it. People believe in church, and they believe in God, and they believe in religion, and 65% of people go to church. Down in the Bible Belt, down in New Orleans and Biloxi and Gulfport, I'm sure that those people down there, 65% of them are going to church and praying to Jesus, and they're real religious, and they give money to the church, and then along comes Hurricane Katrina and destroys everything. And my question is, it's just an outside reporter, I'm just sitting there saying, did any of you religious people down there pray to your God and ask him, please, God, stop this hurricane? Did any of you people think to do that? It could well be that everybody was so excited about the hurricane, they all forgot to ask God to stop it. The Bible says that the prayer of a righteous man avails much. It's valuable. It's worth doing. Was there 5 or 10 preachers down there? Righteous men like Jerry Falwell or Oral Roberts or Jimmy Swaggart or anybody. Any preachers down there? Did any of you preachers down there pray and ask God, stop this? Don't let this happen. Because God did not hear your prayers. Or if he heard them, he didn't answer them. Or if he heard them and he answered them, he answered them in the negative. And he said, I'm going to send that hurricane on you anyway, and I'm going to destroy New Orleans, Gulfport, and Biloxi. And of course, the question arises, well, why would God want to do that? Why would God want to destroy New Orleans, the home of the blues and jazz and Mardi Gras? Why would God do such a thing? Sounds almost sadistic. Now, of course, the question also arises when we talk about sickness and disease. Why does God allow all of the sickness and disease? Is there a way that you could live your life without cancer, without heart attack, without atherosclerosis, diabetes, muscular dystrophy? Is there a way that we could live our lives disease-free? Could that possibly be? Stand by. There's more to come. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package toward yours. Just call the Law School and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Remember, there's no obligation. We're not going to put you on a mailing list. We're not going to sell the mailing list to Reader's Digest or John Deere or anybody else. But I don't want to send this out to people who don't want it. So if you want it, write for it, call, ask for it, and I'll send it to you. And if you don't want it, let it lay. The number to call is 417-273-4967. All right, keep in mind that the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. What that means is that we research the information, and we come to a conclusion that it is true, accurate, and correct. Once in a while, we screw up, though, and we make a mistake. Keep in mind that the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, talking about the poisoned needle. Where have the great strides of medical science taken us? After a glance at the medical records covering the past 70 years of what is boastfully called our great strides of medical science, we can hardly help wondering if those 7-league strides haven't been in reverse, because there has been a very marked decline in our nation's health and a shocking increase in the serious killer diseases during these 70 years. The acute diseases that were supposed to have been conquered by vaccination have only been masked and renamed to save face, or suppressed until the retained poisons corroded the internal organs and developed into dangerous chronic diseases. Now listen to this following table, and it gives us an idea of what our present faulty medical methods are doing to our nation and to our race. Now here's the increase in killer diseases during the past 70 years. Insanity has increased. Now this is between 1904 and 1974 when this book was published. Insanity increased in the United States by 400%. There were four times as many people diagnosed as insane or with a mental disorder by 1974 as were being diagnosed in 1904. Four times. Cancer increased 308%. Anemia increased 300%. Epilepsy increased by 397%. Bright's disease increased 65%. Heart disease increased by 179%. Diabetes increased by 1,800%. Polio increased by 680%. Now, boys and girls, I could go down the list of 450 diseases, and if we were to take a look at the rate of disease per capita in 1900 and 1950 and 2000, I believe that you would find a corresponding increase in the per capita increase in diseases over about every disease that's there. Every disease. Now, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Here's 8 diseases. Now, boys and girls, you would expect, if as a contractor I came into your house and you said, gee, look at this hurricane came in here, and it has damaged the roof, and the roof leaks over the bedroom, and it blew out the window in the living room, and it knocked over a tree, which hit my garage in the back. Now, would you fix that, Mr. Gordon? So I come in, and I go to work, and I charge you money to fix this. So I go to work on your roof, and I fix your roof. And I go to work and I fix the window in the front. And I go back to your garage and I fix the tree. I cut the tree out and I remove the tree and fix your garage. A week later, it rains. And it not only rains and leaks into your bedroom, but it also leaks into the kitchen and the front room. Not only did I replace the window in your living room, but now the windows are broken in the laundry, the basement, and the porch. Oh, and remember the garage? Where I cut the tree and repaired your garage. And now the garage falls down to the ground. Now, would you say that as a contractor, I came in here and caused you greater grief and greater damage? Or would you say that I'm the greatest contractor since the Bechtel Corporation Incorporated, and that you want to hire me to come back and do more work for you? You know, as a businessman, as a general contractor, when I went out and did a job, and let's say you wanted me to re-roof your house, we would presume that your house must have a couple of leaks, and that's why you want to spend $5,000 to have me re-roof it. So if I re-roof it, and you had 2 leaks, and when I get finished, you got 4 leaks, wouldn't you say that I was not much of a roofer? If I came out here to fix a window, and I broke 3 more in the process, would you say I was much of a glazer? You know, when allopathic medicine came on the scene back in 1900, and they said, what you need is vaccinations, and what you need is science in medicine, we bought into the program. We said, well, it makes all the sense in the world. Let's do it. Now, 100 years later, insanity has increased by 400%. We had some insanity back in 1900, no doubt about it. There were some crazy people. But now, after all of the science and after all of the medicines and after all of the antidepressants and all the rest that goes with it, we got 4 times as many. I'm not saying that the antidepressants and the psychiatrist caused the insanity. What I'm telling you is that all the money that you spent, all the time, effort, and energy that you put into it didn't solve your problem. Now, it may be that the psychiatrists have increased insanity. I don't know that. I'm not claiming that. But I'm telling you this, that all of your psychiatrists and all of your analysts and all of your sociologists have not prevented it. They haven't reduced it. They haven't done jack squat. And you spent a lot of money in the process. We do that in our public schools also. We are now spending $7,000 to educate a child in public school. In 1900, we were spending $14 to educate one child in public school. In 1900, they could read and write, and Johnny could read, and we weren't complaining. Today, Johnny can't read. Johnny can't add and subtract. We're spending $7,000. I'm not telling you that the teachers are bad. I'm telling you that the increased money that you have spent on public education has not made Johnny smarter. And if you spent $14,000 on Johnny, It isn't going to teach him how to read. The money that you spend on public education is irrelevant to the quality of education and the ability of the children coming up. Now, of course, the teachers tell us, well, what we need now to get excellence in education is to spend more money. We've been buying into that program for 100 years. And no, we spend more money and the children get dumber. We spend more money on medicine than we get sicker. Now, my common sense tells me you need to scrap the public education system and go back to what you were doing when Johnny could read and Johnny could add and subtract. You need to get rid of the allopathic medical system and go back to doing what you were doing in 1900. You had four times fewer insane people, three times fewer cancer patients. Epilepsy was four times less prevalent. Heart disease was less than half what it is now. Well, that was in 1974. And diabetes increased 18 times, 1,800%. Between 1900 and 1974, diabetes increased 18 times. Modern medicine with insulin did not solve your diabetes problem. You got more people with diabetes today than you've ever had. In fact, I've reported this a time or two, the consumption of soda pop, the consumption of soft drinks increased 100% in 20 years between 1985 and 2005. And the rate of diabetes increased by 100%. You got twice as many diabetics. I'm not sitting here telling you that Coca-Cola causes diabetes, but it sure as hell doesn't prevent it. Because if you're drinking twice as much Coke, you ought to have half as much diabetes. If Coca-Cola was preventing diabetes, they'd come out and tell you, hey, listen, you need to eat more aspirin because people that eat more aspirin have less heart attacks. That's what they tell you on TV. And that may be true, but they're not telling you that about Coke, are they? Now, never in history of this country or in the history of this country have preventable diseases flourished with such wild abandon, continuously being fed by the very drugs and commercialized irritants that set them into operation in the first place. Now, Dr. Alexis Carroll of the Rockefeller Institute said back in July of 1925, this was reported in Scientific Monthly. I'm not talking about the National Enquirer, not talking about the Globe. I'm talking about Scientific Monthly, July 1925. Dr. Alexis Carroll said, quote, although the adult individual today has much less chance of dying from smallpox, cholera, or typhoid than he had 50 years ago, he surely has more prospect of being tortured by some form of cancer, afflicted with slow diseases of the kidneys, of the circulatory apparatus, or of the endocrine glands, and of going insane. Modern medicine protects him, or at least attempts to protect him against infections which kill rapidly, but leaves him totally exposed to the slower and more cruel diseases, unquote. Annie Riley Hale, in The Medical Voodoo, speaks of medicine as a system of healing which, after 5,000 years of trial and error, is describing itself as a science in the making, whose proudest showing to date is that it has enabled the race to swap smallpox for cancer and typhoid fever for diabetes and insanity, and may still be worthy of credence and patronage by its devoted followers. But what justification can there be for putting the whole power of the government back of such a system and the public treasury at its disposal to spread misleading propaganda about its own peculiar doctrines and methods, and then to force those doctrines and methods on the helpless? Now, although there are a number of far more successful and efficient systems of healing in this country, the medical system, the allopathic medical system, is the only one that gets endorsement and support from the government. All of our tax-supported departments of health, hospitals, and institutions are under the domination of medical personnel, and in spite of the financial support, the public confidence, and the full-scale experimentation and testing of all of their methods and their theories and medical school healing, it has utterly failed to control any of the killer diseases and doesn't have a sure cure for even one of the mild diseases. Smallpox and other epidemics were largely controlled by improvements in sanitation and nutrition years before vaccination became popularized. And yet a tremendous sum of money has been poured into the medical coffers every year with no accounting being made for its use and no benefits received. Now, don't you think it's about time that this squandering of public funds be stopped and the better qualified practitioners be given a chance to salvage the wreckage before it is too late? Now, after half a century of medical practice, Dr. John Tilden made the following observation regarding the inadequate medical procedures. He said, quote, the ability to cure has not kept pace with diagnosis. And today we behold the scientific paradox of skilled physicians sometimes knowing exactly what disease the patient is suffering with, but then he is totally unable to cure the disease. The ability to diagnose, but the impotence in curing, is the true status of scientific medicine, unquote. He went on to say, in another quotation, clinicians are floundering about in a sea of speculation and uncertainty concerning cause and cure. And the best of them declare that autopsies prove that almost half of their diagnoses are wrong, unquote. Let me read that to you again. You know, you go to your doctor, and he puts you through this battery of tests. And you pay a lot of money for these tests. And the tests come back, and he diagnoses you, and he says, well, here's what's wrong with you. So he treats you for what he says you have. Then you die. And they put you on the slab, and they do an autopsy on you, and they find out 50% of the time that your doctor's diagnosis was wrong. And you call that science? No, no. Go look up the word science, boys and girls, in the dictionary. Science means knowledge. You know, as a contractor, if I came out to your house and you said to me, it's leaking in the kitchen. And I said to you, okay, let me give you a diagnosis. Termites are eating your foundation and we need to put a new foundation into your house. And you say, oh, I didn't know that. And you pay me $5,000 and I put a new foundation under your house. I eliminate all the termites. A rainstorm comes over and it leaks in your kitchen. Would you say that my diagnosis was correct or false? Now listen, boys and girls, if a contractor did that, you'd be able to figure out that that guy was a lying charlatan and he was stupid. Wouldn't you? We haven't figured that out with medical doctors yet. We're starting to figure that out with the war in Iraq, that there were no weapons of mass destruction. We were snookered and conned by the president and Tony Blair, who lied to us. Okay, so let's wake up to reality, smell the coffee. Is that the first politician that ever lied to us? Will he be the last politician that ever lies to us? But it doesn't make any difference. You people can't remember that into the next election, and he knows that. Besides that, you're going to vote the way you've always voted. You're not going to change just because the president lied to you. And you're not going to stop going to get your vaccinations or stop going to the allopathic medical doctors just because I came in here and said, look, these guys have faulty diagnoses 50% of the time. Now, boys and girls, when you go to a doctor, when the doctor says you got cancer, you expect that you've got cancer. Well, half the time, it'll be something else. I've got a boy here. They diagnosed him with epilepsy. He didn't have epilepsy. He had a deficiency of CoQ10. He had a dietary deficiency, which manifested itself in the form of seizures. But not all seizures are epileptic seizures. Come to find out, the boy never had epilepsy. They had him on epilepsy medication for 17 years. He spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Every time he went to the damn druggist, it was $600 for the prescription. I think every 6 weeks he's going down there to get his prescription filled, and he's taking all of this medication. Here's what the net result was. After 17 years, his seizures were worse at the end of 17 years with all of the thousands of dollars of medication when he got all through. One day he woke up and he said, well, the medication doesn't work anymore. He believed that it worked in the early days. I don't know if it was psychosomatic or whether it was the placebo theory or what it was. But after 17 years on epilepsy medication, he said, I'm going to get off this medication. The doctor said, you can't. Nobody ever gets off of epilepsy medication once they're on it, especially for 17 years. It took him, now he's a drug addict, see? I mean, when you're taking this high-potency drug for 17 years, boys and girls, that's drug addiction. I mean, you're a drug addict. I mean, he was nasty to get along with for about, I don't know, 3 months. I mean, he was just terrible. He was a drug addict coming off of dope. But he made up his mind. He said, you know, I'm coming off this dope. And so he cut his prescription in half, and he cut that in half, and he got to doing some research, and he got to looking into vitamins and minerals and one thing and another. And so the more he read, the more he learned, and the more he learned, the more he found out, and the more he found out, he said, well, hell, these symptoms aren't epilepsy. These symptoms are vitamin deficiency. I've got a deficiency. I've got a nutritional deficiency in my body. And he replaced the nutritional deficiency with what he needed, which was something called CoQ10, whatever the hell that is, and it cured it up. He doesn't have seizures anymore. So I'm just telling you, you know, from my own personal observation, my own experience here, that, yeah, that doctor. And all the doctors from that one on, you know, the doctor that diagnosed him 17 years ago isn't the same doctor that he was going to here, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago. He's had several doctors, and they all came along with the same, well, yeah, you got epilepsy. Yep, that's what that is. That's epilepsy. No, it wasn't. Wasn't epilepsy at all. And that's just one experience that probably you've personally had yourself. Well, if you've had the same experience, you know, well, then why don't you wake up to reality and let's smell the coffee and smell the roses and let's start doing some research. Are you really sure that these vaccines and these vaccinations over here are all that you believe they are? Now, I've only got 3 or 4 minutes left, so I'm gonna flip over here a couple of pages to where it talks about unvaccinated diseases declined faster than the vaccinated smallpox. Records in every country. Got this? I want to underline this word every here. Records in every country show that the so-called contagious diseases declined quite rapidly with the introduction of sanitation and nutrition reforms, with the exception of smallpox and diphtheria, which were kept active by, and I'm going to underword the word, kept active by vaccination in a large number of authenticated cases. The following condensed records from various countries give a cross-section of the available evidence that bears out this point. Here's a report from India. In 1929, while India was still under British rule with its compulsory vaccination laws, the League of Nations, Health League, referred to India as the greatest center of smallpox in the world today. And the records show that in the large cities where vaccination enforcement was most rigid, the smallpox death rate has been generally far greater than for the country as a whole, where complete enforcement is not possible. The report of the League of Nations Health Division for October 1953 reluctantly admits vaccination is not all that it ought to be when it says in part, quote, in spite of the great efforts made by the health authorities in promoting vaccination, smallpox is not on the point of extinction. And after the limited health improvement programs, we find that the plagues and scourges all declined noticeably except smallpox and respiratory diseases, that's tuberculosis, which is a common effect after a vaccination. After vaccination. The average death rate from the fevers and other causes. I don't have time to get into that right now, so I'm going to cover that next time. Next time, right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and I'm going to give you the statistics. And we'll take you back to the 1870s. Hell, we knew back in the 1850s, that smallpox vaccination killed more people than people that were unvaccinated. And that isn't just for smallpox, it's for all the diseases. And this is the book here. I don't know if you can get a copy. It's called The Poison Needle. Why don't you get online, see if you can go on the web and find The Poisoned Needle by Eleanor McBean, M-C-B-E-A-N, Eleanor McBean, published in 1974. Next time, I'll give you those facts and figures and those statistics. And then if you want to go get shot up for the flu vaccine or with the flu vaccine, you know, be my guest and get right after it. But take a little time, effort, and energy and look into the facts first. And I think you'll end up like I did, saying, hey, listen, I think I'll take my chances. I think I'll stay off of the flu vaccine. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, with the conclusion to vaccination. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.